The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The Triangle Radio Reading Service presents Tech Tips, a monthly 30-minute show covering a wide range of assistive technologies, including portable and mobile devices, computers, and computer software designed for the blind and print-impaired community. Coming up on this month's episode of Tech Tips, a senior's buying guide for computers, smartphones, and tablets, along with Everyone Can Code. That's what's coming up on this month's episode of Tech Tips. Buying an accessible piece of technology is always a daunting task, especially if you're a senior and it's your first time. This is Access Technology 101, a senior's buying guide for your first accessible computer, smartphone, and tablet. Comes to us from the Access World magazine, and it is written by Bill Holton. Everyone keeps telling you, you have to get with the times and buy a computer and a smartphone. They want to stay in touch on Facebook and send emails and receive them from you in return. You've finally agreed, and now you are getting an earful of advice from those same people telling you which model of what device you should buy. Funny thing, the products they usually think you should buy just happen to be the same products they themselves already own. Only they have 20/20 vision and don't require any accessibility features. You're left wondering, which computer or smartphone is right for me? To help, we offer this buying guide to help you shop for computers and touchscreen devices such as smartphones and tablets. We'll help you make sense of all the gobbledygook of specifications and features and focus on the very few things you really need to know in order to make a successful and accessible purchase. Putting the personal in personal computer. Let's begin this section by describing the major differences between models of personal computers. Desktops versus notebooks. A desktop computer usually consists of several modular components. The CPU, which is a fancy way of saying the big box that connects to the monitor, speakers, keyboard, and a pointing device, usually either a touchpad or a computer mouse, which sighted individuals rely on to issue commands and navigate their computer screens. If you still retain some usable sight, you may be able to use one of these pointing devices after enlarging the screen text and images. However, most blind individuals prefer to use a screen reader, which requires a set of speakers. We will discuss both of these options below. Some desktop computers come as a single all-in-one unit, which can be a real space saver. If you want to save even more space or wish to carry your computer to different locations, consider a notebook PC, a single unit that folds open and these days usually weighs in at less than 5 pounds. The display will be smaller. If that's a concern, however, it is possible to purchase a larger monitor to connect to when you need more screen real estate to enlarge print, pictures, or watch videos. There are two flavors of both desktops and notebook computers. Windows PCs, which are manufactured by any number of companies but which nearly always operate using the Microsoft Windows operating system, and Macs, which run on the Mac operating system and are solely manufactured by Apple. Please note, a computer operating system is the program that actually causes a computer to wake up when the power button is pressed and which hosts programs such as a web browser, word processor, or email software. Here's the good news. Both Windows and Mac computers come with a built-in screen reader and screen magnification software. You can try either of these accessibility features before you buy, assuming, of course, the unit is powered on at the store. A screen reader is a special piece of software that runs on top of your regular word processor or web browser and speaks the text and describes many of the graphics as you go. Screen readers also offer special keyboard commands to help users with visual impairments move about the screen and issue commands just as sighted users do using a mouse or touchpad. Screen magnification software does just that. It enlarges the print and images displayed on the screen up to several 100%. You can enlarge the entire screen or just the portion that is currently most essential to the task at hand. You can also adjust the color contrast and even select an entirely new color plate. You can try out these features right there at the computer store or with a friend's computer. For both narrator and voiceover, the first time you start the screen reader, you will be offered a brief tutorial to demonstrate the fundamentals of using a computer screen reader. It's well worth the few minutes to complete. On a Windows computer, to summon the built-in screen reader called Narrator, simply press the keyboard combination of Control plus Windows plus Enter. The Control key is usually at the extreme lower left of the standard keyboard. The Windows key is immediately to its right. The Enter key is a large key on the right side of the keyboard, analogous to the Return key on a typewriter. Press the same key combination to toggle Narrator off. Alternatively, press the Windows key and the letter U simultaneously to call up the Windows Ease of Access menu, where you will find a number of accessibility features including screen magnification, personalized text and background color preferences, cursor size and color, and alternate voices for the narrator screen reader. To turn on the Mac VoiceOver, on Mac computers, press the Command key, usually located directly to the left of the spacebar, and the F5 key from the uppermost keyboard row together to call up the VoiceOver screen reader. Press the Command plus Option plus F8 key combination to summon VoiceOver settings. The Option key is between the Command and Control keys. Press Control plus Option plus the plus sign key to zoom in on the screen, which is to say make the text and images larger, and Control plus Option plus the minus sign key to zoom back out. The Mac OS system preferences offer more fine detailed magnification controls. When it comes to purchasing a computer, these days you will find notebook computers for sale from just over $100 to gaming PCs costing upwards of $2,000. What's the difference? Basically, it comes down to processing power, working memory, storage space, storage speed, and network connection. High-end sound and graphics capabilities can also affect the price of a computer. High-end sound cards can play music and videos in surround sound, while high-end graphics cards can process complex game images faster. For most computer users with visual impairments, however, the basic built-in sound and graphics capabilities will be sufficient. A computer's processor chip does just that. It runs programs and processes data. There are two main chip makers, Intel and AMD. But since most computers these days come with Intel processors, we'll focus on those. There are several generations of Intel processor chips, including i3, i5, i7, and the latest and greatest i9. For most users, i9 chips would be overkill. Likewise, i3 chips may be a bit underpowered. An i5 chip meets the sweet spot of performance versus price, and if you have the cash, an i7 chip is perhaps an upgrade you will want to consider after you determine how much RAM you want. Random access memory, usually referred to as RAM, stores programs and data temporarily while they wait to be processed or moved into long-term storage. 4 gigabytes of RAM is more than adequate for browsing the web, composing documents and spreadsheets, and sending and receiving emails. 8 gigabytes may offer a bit more speed, but over 8 won't make much of a difference unless you are doing a lot of video editing or computer-aided design. Recently, there has been an outpouring of low-end notebook computers featuring only 2 gigabytes of RAM. Avoid these if at all possible, as you may find yourself experiencing a lot of choppy screen reader speech or sluggish screen magnification and navigation. Until recently, most computer data storage was performed using hard drives that used spinning platters to read and write data. The size of the hard drives were determined by how many platters were being used and how closely the rings of data could be written with the disk's read-write head. The speed of data transfer was determined by how many revolutions per minute the disk spun. 5,400 and 7,200 revolutions per minute were typical speeds. More recently, data storage has been transferred to actual memory chips, which are now configured to maintain data even when the power is turned off. Think photos on a digital camera or music on an MP3 player. The transfer rate is decidedly faster, and there are no moving parts to break down. The trade-off is price. The same amount of storage is considerably more expensive using memory chips on a solid-state drive, or SSD, than traditional hard drives. So the compromise here is space. Usually, SSD drives are much smaller than similarly priced hard drives, but that's okay, since these days, much more of our information is being stored on the cloud. If you go the SSD route, try to avoid systems with only 8 or 16 gigabyte SSDs. 32 gigabyte is the minimum, and if you can afford it or require more space for your music and video downloads, consider 64, 128, 500 gigabytes or more. In order to connect to the internet, you will need to arrange for a broadband connection from your local cable or phone company. They will install a modem/router in your home, and you will then use either a wired connection or a wireless connection known as a Wi-Fi. Your new computer may come with both methods, but these days an increasingly number of units are shipped with Wi-Fi only. A wired connection links your computer to the router using a network cable with larger than usual telephone jack connectors. A Wi-Fi connection links your computer via radio waves. Your new computer will most likely automatically detect your Wi-Fi signal. You will then need to select your network and enter your password. So make sure the service tech who does the installation tells you how to find these. Let's now look at purchasing Windows versus Mac computers. Further considerations for people with visual impairments. Since Windows PCs are manufactured by a number of companies, there is more competition and consequently, prices tend to be lower on Windows PCs than on Macs. If you are on a fixed budget and are struggling to find funds, an organization called Computers for the Blind offers refurbished Windows computers preloaded with lots of accessible software for considerably less than a new computer. And they often feature grants that make their offerings even more budget-friendly. Another benefit of using a Windows PC is the simple fact that there is a much larger percentage of people with visual impairments using Windows. In fact, once you purchase your Windows PC, you can try at least 2 third-party screen readers. NVDA is an open-source screen reader that is absolutely free to install and use. Download a copy at nvaccess.org. The JAWS screen reader and ZoomText screen magnifier are both feature-packed pieces of software offered by Visparo. The cost of purchasing perpetual home licenses can be prohibitive, but each of these products can now be purchased via a yearly license costing $90 for JAWS and $80 for ZoomText. Whether you wind up with a Windows or Mac computer, free accessibility support is available. For Windows, the Microsoft Accessibility Web Portal is your first stop for information about screen readers and screen magnification. You can also receive personalized accessibility support by calling the Microsoft Answer Desk at 1-800-936-5900. That number again is 1-800-936-5900. Mac owners will also want to check out Apple's accessibility portal. If you can't find your answer there, Apple also provides telephone accessibility support at 1-877-204-3930. That number again is 1-877-204-3930. Now that we've talked about PCs, let's talk about touchscreen phones and tablets. Now that you've all but worn out your keypad on the trusty featured phone, pecking out text messages to your kids and grandkids, maybe it's time to move on to a touchscreen device, a smartphone, or touchscreen tablet. Here, the shopping experience is similar to buying a new computer, as there are two major hardware device categories, each running on one of two different software platforms. Smartphone or tablet. A smartphone is usually palm-sized, with at least one surface of touch-activated glass. A tablet usually offers a larger screen, Although these days, the difference in size between smartphones and tablets is shrinking. A smartphone connects to a cellular network for making phone calls and connecting to the internet when you're not in range of your Wi-Fi. It also includes a GPS, or Global Positioning System, chip for turn-by-turn directions and other location-based services. Both smartphones and touchscreen tablets use Wi-Fi to connect to the internet and to run apps, which are small programs designed to run on phones and tablets, which usually perform a specific task, such as web browsing, email, or uploading a photo to Facebook, Apple, or Google. Smartphones and tablets run on one of two operating systems, Apple iOS or Google Android. In the previous section, we tended to recommend a Windows PC over a Mac because more people with visual impairments use this platform and because it's possible to use more than one kind of screen access software on a Windows PC. In the smartphone and tablet arena, it's Apple's iPhone and iPad that gets the nod. An even larger percentage of people with visual impairments uses iPhones and iPads than Android devices. The iPhone was the first touchscreen device to offer an onboard screen reader, VoiceOver, and built-in low-vision features such as magnification and contrast controls. Ease of updating. Apple's iOS mobile operating system is easier to update than Android. The software updates are sent directly from Apple to your device. Android updates are first shunted off to the various carriers, who may or may not choose to pass along the latest software versions to your device in a timely fashion. First mover advantages. Since Apple offered the first accessible touchscreen device, developers working on apps specifically tailored to the needs of those with visual impairments tend to release their offers first on iOS, then, if there is sufficient interest, on Android. Nearly every variety of access software, from the Bard mobile app that allows you to read talking books on your device to blind-friendly navigation apps, were released first on iOS. Security. Apple's App Store is curated considerably more strictly than Google's Store, which is called Google Play. Malware and other security threats are far less common on Apple devices. A more consistent experience. Because of early agreements, carriers are not allowed to modify Apple devices before they are sold to their customers. Most carriers add their own branded software programs and utilities to Android phones, and these modifications can be a nuisance to access users at best and can even reach deal-breaker status. If you are considering an Android smartphone, you will be best served with a phone running an unmodified version of Android, such as the Android One devices. Support. Apple offers the same telephone support for their mobile devices as they do for their computers. Google only offers email support here, though you may also be able to obtain limited accessibility support from your carrier. Of course, Android phones and tablets do have their advantages. Customization. Apple devices are spoken about as being inside a walled garden. This offers the user more security, since apps and other software must be tested and approved by Apple before they are made available to consumers. This can also lead to a limited ability to customize and personalize your device. For new accessible smartphone and tablet users, however, we consider this limitation a plus and not a minus. Cost. You can purchase an Android tablet for well under $100 and an Android smartphone for under $200. Even so, for a new touchscreen access user, we recommend that your first device come from Apple. Then, if you wish to expand your access horizons, consider one of the budget-priced Android tablets and go from there. Getting started with a smartphone or tablet. As with Windows, PCs, and Macs, both mobile device operating systems come with a built-in screen reader and low-vision features. You can also purchase both phones and tablets with larger screens, which is handy for those with low vision. Like computers, touchscreen devices come with varying processor types, quantities of random access memory, and storage capacities. Most new phones will perform fine, even with the extra load of a screen reader or low-vision features. Hand-me-down or older devices may not be able to run the latest versions of the operating system and may be missing some of the latest and greatest bells and whistles. Let's turn on your screen reader for an Apple iPhone or iPad. On a new device, press the Home button on older models or the power button on newer models. 3 times in quick succession. Perform the same gesture to turn VoiceOver off. If the phone is already running, press and hold the home or power button until you hear a beep. Then say, turn VoiceOver on. You can also say, turn VoiceOver off to toggle the screen reader off. With Android phones, on a new Android phone or tablet, place 2 fingers on the screen, then power on the device. TalkBack, the Android screen reader, will automatically start. On an already running device, press and hold the volume up and volume down button simultaneously for 3 seconds. Resources for learning how to use your device. It is beyond the scope of this buyer's guide to teach you how to use your new iOS or Android device. But you or a family member will discover a wealth of information and tutorials on the internet to help you develop your mobile device skills. Consider starting with Apple's Accessibility Portal or Google's Get Started on Android with TalkBack Android Accessibility Help page. As a footnote to this article, if you're going to go with a third-party piece of software, say JAWS or ZoomText, it will be well worth it to look at the software specifications. This will give you an idea of the minimum requirements your laptop or desktop PC will need to have. And that information is usually available at the product's websites. Listening to Tech Tips on the Triangle Radio Reading Service. You ever thought about learning how to code? Well, Apple partners with RNB to bring its Everyone Can Code curricula to blind and low vision students in the UK. Apple has launched a partnership with the Royal National Institute of Blind People, RNIB, that will bring its accessible coding curriculum to blind and low vision users in the United Kingdom. The program was initially launched in May of 2018 when Apple announced partnerships with a number of schools for the blind and deaf in the United States to bring its Everyone Can Code curricula to their students. Through its Everyone Can Code initiative, Apple provides a range of teacher guides and lessons, with students using iPads and the Swift Playgrounds app to use real programming code to solve puzzles and control characters. Apple says that it collaborated with engineers, educators, and programmers from various accessibility communities to make Everyone Can Code as accessible as possible, and that it works in close coordination with partner schools and organizations to augment the curricula as needed. This includes providing additional tools and resources such as tactile maps to enhance the understanding of coding environments for non-visual learners. Speaking at the time of the program's launch, Apple CEO Tim Cook said that the company's mission, quote, is to make products as accessible as possible, and we hope to bring Everyone Can Code to even more schools around the world serving students with disabilities, end quote. The partnership with RNIB is a step towards that vision and Apple's desire to make coding and app development accessible to all. Both Apple and RNIB will be making additional teaching and learning resources available in the coming months to complement what's already available through the program. The new resources will include separate books with graphics of the levels from Swift Playgrounds that are rendered in tactile, braille, and high-contrast ink print. Additionally, RNIB will be working with schools from across the UK to raise awareness of the accessible coding program and provide support and resources to teachers of blind and low vision students. RNIB's Director of Services, David Clark, said, quote, every child, including children with visual impairment, should have the opportunity to learn the programming and computer coding skills that are a part of the national school curriculum. This especially is important for future participation in the growing digital economy. However, Many of the tools and methods used by schools to introduce children to coding are not accessible to all, end quote. Apple's Director of Global Accessibility Policy and Initiatives, Sarah Harlinger, makes an interesting comment on how ensuring discoverability of the accessibility features of the company's products has become a growing challenge. The sheer number and reach of accessibility features has meant that the challenge for Apple and its users has now become as much about helping people find features as it is about creating them. To do so, it ensures that accessibility is promoted throughout its retail stores all over the world. That happens in the potentially obvious ways, like ensuring that employees are fully briefed as to how to welcome anyone into its stores. But it happens in the longer-term ones, too, such as ensuring that retail staff are able to take people through all the accessibility features and running workshops. Just as the company throws events to teach people how to take the perfect selfie, there are similar events and lessons on the potentially hidden accessibility features found in iOS devices. If Apple is serious about improving the discoverability of accessibility features, we would like to take this opportunity to strongly encourage them to begin providing detailed release notes for software updates. This has been a long-standing wish to many who rely on accessibility features and would ensure that people have the ability to know exactly what has changed between versions. Sarah Harlinger went on to say how accessibility is at the core of Apple's design philosophy and process. Such an approach is core to what Apple does, says Sarah Harlinger. Everyone in Apple's engineering staff has that, quote, foundation, because the company is clear, quote, what our corporate values are and why they are important, end quote. But the key role that the accessibility team plays makes sure that is part of everything Apple does. Quote, because it is just one team, they can really pay attention and ensure that when things are developed, there's a consistency across them, she says. Today's announcement was timed to coincide with a talk by Sarah Harlinger at BET 2019, a teaching technology trade show being held in London. In a session titled Accessibility at Apple, Innovating for All, Sarah Harlinger spoke on how Apple believes technology can play a powerful role in helping students be more productive, creative, collaborative, and engaged, regardless of learning style. So build accessibility features into everything they make. She encouraged educators to learn about the power of accessible design to create the most engaging learning experience for all. The RNIB is one of the UK's largest sight loss charities and largest community of blind and partially sighted people. We've run out of time for today's episode of Tech Tips. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Chris Skidmore, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Tech Tips is readily available as a podcast after this broadcast by visiting our website at www.trianglereadingservice.org. Tech Tips is produced by Chris Skidmore in cooperation with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. If you have any questions, you can email me. My email address is chris@trrsnc.org, or you can give us a call. Our telephone number is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to Tech Tips.